always good with the storytelling behind the scenes. We bring in Kevin Kernan from the New York Post. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing great, Lori. Actually standing right in the middle of Main Street in Cooperstown, New York right now with a full moon up top. So it's the end of a busy day.
That actually sounds like something out of a, It's a Wonderful Life meets, The Natural, right out of a baseball movie at Americana. Nothing better than that. Cooperstown with the moon out. All right. So, I was saying before, one of the things I love about talking to you is while we can talk baseball and what happens on the field, I also do appreciate some of the stories about players as people. So in terms of before we even get to who got inducted today, give some of the fans and our listeners an idea of who are some of the players that you've seen, wandering around at Cooperstown, and anybody maybe you had a conversation with, but who are some of the noteworthies that you've seen around over the last couple days?
I've been coming here for many years. Almost every year I come up, so I've built a relationship with the people in the hall. So they trust me, and there's a core of writers who they really trust, and in a way know that they won't make themselves obnoxious. I think that's the best way to put it. So we get pretty good entree into the Otisauga Hotel, where the Hall of Famers actually hang out, and that's where they are the whole weekend. And so, I'm not trying to name drop, but, having breakfast and, on the veranda, and you spend 20 minutes talking to Cal Ripken about the game and hitting and what's going on with launch angle and what's the real story behind and where are we heading with this game. And then
let's start right there. That's an interesting one, is what does, launch angle and home runs and all of that on the one hand, on the other hand, all the high strikeouts and, does somebody like a Cal Ripken think at some point that while home runs and launch angle are important, that we will see a return to the value of getting a base hit?
Yeah, he's absolutely astonished that the hitters haven't adjusted yet. And they are starting to adjust a little bit. But like he says, there were always launch angle guys. They were called Dave Kingman, Frank Howard, and things like that. It's nothing new. And the pitchers, the pitchers like Chad Green, I talked about it with him, and he says they made the adjustments to throwing a high strike. And that's why some of these guys aren't as effective as they used to be. It's all about, the big point he made about hitting. And the great thing is, again, when you're talking, breakfast may be over, you may be just hanging out on the veranda, but he's actually now standing up and demonstrating how he's showing me with his hand how the bat has got to come through the zone, and the whole key to hitting is keeping the bat in the zone the longest period of time. And if you do super launch angle, well, that's not going to happen. And also the low pitch, this is one of his big points too. It has nothing to do with launch angle, because if you get the bat through the zone the way you're supposed to there, and the angle of the pitch, it's the way it hits the bat, it's gonna create launch angle. So it's a lot of it. He kind of agrees with me, where it's basically a new way, new terminology for something that's old. So people who don't really see the game the way they should see the game can talk to one another. It's like they're creating a new language, so to speak. But he thinks he'll come around. And even this is very interesting, because it's not like Cal's living in the past. Again, his father, manager, so he's been in baseball his whole life. His whole family's been in the game. And he said, I think it'd be interesting. I don't know why teams don't go to lefty catchers. So he's not afraid to try something new. And he made a great point about lefty catchers, because it's not like it used to be with catchers. And now you can make that throw to third, and nobody's stealing anyway. Bobby Cox, another example. So I walk another 20 feet in the lounge, and I see Bobby. And the first thing Bobby says, and we start talking about, obviously, all chipper and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then we start talking about, who's going to be future Hall of Famers. And the first thing he says to me is, I tell you, a guy I got to vote for, if I had a vote, and he was in the veterans committees and things like that, but he says, the guy I would vote for, without a doubt, that son of a gun is so tough and he's so competitive, is CeCe Sabathia. So you hear a lot of talk, is CeCe a Hall of Fame pitcher? Well, the guy who has just put in a bunch of Hall of Fame pitchers in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and is in the Hall of Fame himself, is saying CeCe Sabathia should be in the Hall of Fame. Then you go another 20 feet, I run into Robbie Alomar, and I talked to Robbie about Gleyber Torres, because I covered Robbie when he was a rookie out in San Diego in 1988, when you and me together on the backfields. And I say, wow, this kid is tremendous. He should be up. So I start writing articles. This kid should be up. Chuck Feeney, the president of the team, gets mad at me because he doesn't want to bring him up because they're trying to hold him down contractually. Randy Reddy gets hurt 10 games into the season or whatever it was. My numbers may be off. And they call up Robbie Alomar. I call Chuck Feeney at home, and I identify him. I say, hey, it's Kevin Turner from the Union Tribune. At the time, we were San Diego Union. He goes, and the first words to Chuck Feeney out of his mouth are, "E too, Bruce?"
It's funny about what you said is I swear to you, Brian Roscoe, my producer, can vouch for it. Right before I came on the air, I was chatting with Brian, and we were talking about the Yankees player development and saying how Gleyber Torres comes up to the major leagues and how polished he already looks, how smooth and polished as a player. And I actually did throw out, I'm not saying exact same player at all, but I did actually say to him, you know, basically Robbie Alomar Jr. Like, he has that same sort of smoothness and look. So what does Robbie Alomar Jr. think of that comp?
He thinks it's a great comp, and he's impressed with his knowledge of the game. And don't forget how one of the things Gleyber does very well is he can throw from different angles, and that's mm-hmm. what Robbie did very well. And he covers a lot of ground, so he's very impressed. And that's a story I'll be writing at some point, you know, what Robbie thinks of Gleyber Torres. He was all in on Gleyber Torres. He is super impressed with him. And when I told him that Omar Vizquel was Gleyber Torres' favorite player growing up, he said, I can see some of the comparisons. So you know, ball players know ball players, and mm-hmm. I think that's always the great thing with my coverage and the post in general. But you know, I just don't say things out of the top of my head. I mean, I do have strong opinions, Jeff, but I do my homework, and I talk to people who know, and that's the beauty of being at the Hall of Fame, is not necessarily sitting through six speeches in 100 or what seems like 100 degree heat, but the beauty of the Hall of Fame and being, and the purpose mm-hmm. of being here is spending that time in the morning or lunch, or you go to dinner yep. and you run into somebody, and that's really what I do to get the most out of this event.
Talking to Kevin Kernan from the Post about the Hall of Fame weekend and being there in Cooperstown, one guy I wanted to ask you about, he wasn't inducted this weekend, but one of the inductees mentioned him, is I know you are a San Diego guy. You covered the Padres, as you said. Is Trevor Hoffman, obviously inducted the former Padre into the Hall of Fame, and I saw some coverage of him in an interview, a feature piece this weekend from MLB Network. And the one thing that struck me that Trevor Hoffman said is how sad he was that he wished that Tony Gwynn, Mr. Padre, was there to sort of welcome him to the Hall of Fame. And I wanted to get your feelings about that.
Oh, it's definitely true. You know, he is sad about it. Trevor's a great guy. I went to the, you know, and the other thing, we always, when we can, a group of writers, myself, Bob Nightingale, maybe Scott Miller, we always try to get to the team parties when we're done working on Saturday night. And we did go to the Padres party, and which was about 6 miles out of town at a brewery. And it was it was the best Hall of Fame party I've ever been to. They threw the best one ever. But, you know, I saw Tony Gwynn Jr. last week when I was at the Mets game. Tony does radio for the Padres Network now. I saw him at the party, and we talked. And I saw his wife, Alicia, this morning at breakfast with Dave Winfield, actually, and we were talking with Dave. And Tony has left such a mark on San Diego. It's almost a hole in the soul type thing mm-hmm. for that town, because they have to put up with so much with their baseball team. And the question, it came up at dinner tonight with some of the guys I'm with. I was with a bunch of scouts and stuff, and you know, will the Padres ever have a Hall of Fame player again? And you got to wonder about if they ever will. And that's what Trevor is talking about. And I thought Trevor did a terrific job, and even in little things like coming out of the party last night, he stopped to talk to every kid that wanted to talk to him. And you know, it's just I didn't get a chance to write it today, but I was very impressed with he did not forget the fact that, you know, San Diego is a military town, and mm-hmm. and that freedom is not free. And so, you know, there's other things going on here. And I also had a long talk last night with his brother, Glenn Hoffman. coach of the Padres. And Glenn, and I had forgotten this, but Glenn, you know, coming up through the Red Sox series, he was telling me how, you know, he's in spring training, his first spring training, he's hanging in the back room the whole time with Ted Williams. Ted Williams is playing.
Wow.
Ted Williams
is,
he's playing chess with John Henry, Ted Williams' son, and Ted is second guessing every move that Glenn makes on the chessboard. So these are the kind of stories. These are the kind of stories that again, these are stories you don't hear unless you're here and unless you have a certain respect among those people, and that's the connection that baseball gives. And I think we saw that connection today in so many ways. And I wrote about it a little bit tomorrow. On a couple stories. I did two columns for tomorrow. And, you know, I don't know if you read my Mickey Mantle piece today with Chipper Jones.
Mm-hmm.
My brother covered Chipper in high school, knows his dad real well. And it's always been they've always been Mickey Mantle centric. And of course, Mickey, there was a great story today. I've heard the story before, but it was worth repeating, where the first time Chipper met him at a card show, and he's hanging out, he's scared to death meeting Mickey Mantle, and he's just a minor league player at this point. And at some point, he finally gets up the nerve to say, Mickey, how do you put up with this? Because he's watching all the adults come over to him fawning and basically crying when they meet Mickey Mantle. And Mickey goes, well, you know, he says, you know, I had this dream that, I'm up in front of the pearly gates and, God is looking me over and whether or not should I get in. And he says, don't worry, Mick, you're in. Hey, but can you sign these box of baseballs for me? So that's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of stuff you get from me when you read me. And also, I jokingly call myself AMBS, a name I wasn't given. I didn't give myself, but someone else gave it. America's Most Beloved Sports Writer. So I call it the AMBS Life.
Well, only have another couple minutes, but before we let you go, I taped all the speeches so I can listen to them later on over the next couple of days myself. But for those who weren't there, anything in terms of fan base that was out there, who had the biggest fan representation, or were you particularly impressed with a particular fan base that was out there this weekend in Cooperstown?
I think the Braves had a great contingent, and, they're kind of getting used to this. It was kind of a different year, though, I got to say, because you had so many guys, six guys,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it was a mixture. It wasn't like when Pedro went in and you had the music and the Dominican flags, with Vladimir, Guerrero.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was a contingent, but not that large. So I would say the Braves, but again, it's more of a celebration. This was a different one this year. This was more homogenized, and next year, and I wrote about this in the column, we can flip the calendar now. This one's over. These six guys are in. Now let's play Enter Sandman. Because next year is Mariano Rivera. And then the following year, of course, is Jeter.
Yeah.
So the Hills will be alive with pinstripes.
Now, I only have a few seconds, but do you think there's a pretty good chance that Mike Mussina might get in next year?
I don't think he'll get in, but I think he'll continue to trend properly, because I think people are starting to respect the fact that these pitchers, what they had to do to get through. I think, don't forget, too, next year Halliday's on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So that changes
yep,
the equation,
Halliday.
Too.
And, yep, that'll
yes.
be,
so
that'll
I think
be
he,
interesting.
He might be the pitcher a lot of people gravitate towards.
All right. Well, for Mike Mussina, at some point, pitching 40% of your games in, divided between Fenway Park and Camden Yards and Yankee Stadium should count for something in the steroid era at some point. Kevin,
exactly. And I believe it 100% that he's eventually going to get in the Hall of Fame.
Kevin Kernan from the Post, appreciate the time. Have fun in Cooperstown. Catch up with you soon.